Consumer Focus with Martin Newman.
Hello and welcome to Consumer Focus, bringing you expert advice and opinions on customer service and the Great British High Street. My name is Martin Newman, and I've worked in commerce for over 35 years. I am absolutely dedicated to championing the consumer and helping businesses to develop the best strategies for their customers. Today I'm joined by Maria Shenoweth, who is the CEO of Trade, which is a charity working to stop clothes from being thrown away and to get people choosing secondhand over new clothing. They turn clothes waste into funds and resources to reduce the environmental and social impacts of our clothes. It's a circular and sustainable approach to the problems of clothes waste tackling disposal. Maria, thank you so much for joining me.
Hello.
Tell me, what was the motivation for Trade and who founded it?
So Trade is 21 years old this year, and it was founded by a collection of people that saw a niche in charity retail. So 20 years ago, charity shops were deemed a bit smelly, a bit old-fashioned, yep. And Trade exploded onto the high street with this bright branding. It was very youth-focused. There was vintage clothing within the stores. And so through our shops and branding, communication and marketing, Trade was and still is instrumental to getting people to wear secondhand and shop charity shop.
And I guess to a large extent, and we'll come on and talk about this in a minute, you know, your time has really come, hasn't it? Given that we seem to be moving at a pace into the sort of circular economy and the general consumer, not just awareness, but action around, you know, fast fashion and the move towards essentially buying less or buying less frequently or buying repurposed.
This is something Trade has been talking about for the last 15, 20 years. You know, initially it was the disposal and the waste issues that we're tackling. And it's been on a long journey. And there's been lots of people in the industry talking about the issues of clothing. It hasn't been listened to. Yeah. But here we are in 2020, and there is a climate emergency. Australia's on fire. Absolutely. And there is a correlation with our clothing and consumption and the corporation and how it produces clothing. So now, even more so, charity shops, secondhand clothing, it's really vital to start tackling and addressing these issues.
Sure, let's come back and talk about that, because I want to dive into that a bit as well. How long have you been involved with Trade?
So this is my 21st year at Trade.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Thank you.
No, don't look it. I started just after it launched, like a couple of weeks after. And before that, I worked for another charity. So I've been in this industry of promoting selling secondhand clothes for good for 28 years.
Right.
And then before that, I was a manager in the commercial retail sector.
Presumably, you didn't start as a CEO at Trade. So, what was your first job there?
So, I started as the head of retail.
Right.
So, I came from another charity where I was working in retail, in the retail division. And then in 2003, I became the CEO. And so, it was a bit of a gamble because I hadn't been, you know, CEO before for the charity. And it was one that paid off. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've taken the organisation to being more successful in regards to spreading the message of the environmental impact of clothing, selling more clothes.
Tell us a bit more about Trade in terms of, you know, not just what you do as an organisation, but where you do it.
Where we do it.
Yeah.
Well, geographically, our shops are based in London, so people see us as a London-centric
charity. Right. How many shops
charity.
Have you got?
We've got 11 at the moment, and they're very different to other charity retail stores. So ours are very big. We sell 1 million items of clothing every year. And we're expanding to another 2 this year in Lewisham and Walthamstow. And we've got these much bigger. I think our stores are something like 5 times larger than other
than the average charity
than the average charity shop, and either 3 or 5 times the turnover.
Right.
So
yeah.
One of those stats.
Yeah.
And so the aim is, you know, when somebody does come into a Trade shop, that they will be able to find something to buy. And it is open to all and all demographics and tastes and styles.
fantastic. And do you also provide a service for other retailers? Do you provide the recycling proposition that you have for clothing? Is that something that you also partner with other retailers on?
Or? Yeah, we do. So there is a huge issue of overconsumption and overproduction.
Yeah.
So what we do with other retailers, we launched a 23% campaign, which was last year.
Right.
And so working with other retailers, it's getting the message to their customers that trade will come in a van. You can book a home collection slot, collect the clothing that you no longer wear in your wardrobe. Mm-hmm. So the reason why it's called 23% is because we did a survey and 23% of all the clothing in our wardrobe is actually unworn.
Right.
So that's one aspect where we work retailers. And then also in relation to overproduction or stock that hasn't sold, then they donate it to trade.
Right.
And then we sell it through our charity shops. And I guess what I didn't mention earlier of what trade does, we also fund international development projects which are all focused on the textile supply chain. So we fund really on the ground projects from organic cotton seeds. Because there is a shortage, because most of them are genetically modified. We support farmers converting from conventional, which I don't like that term any conventional, because it's not conventional, but pesticide use, farming to organic.
More traditional.
Yes. To organic farming. And so currently, at the moment, just in relation to that, which isn't all our international work either, trade funds 2% of all global organic cotton grown. So you think this smallish charity.
That's unbelievable.
All the organic cotton in Ethiopia
and
85% of the organic cotton in Benin. So just that
That's
is
incredible.
Just from the million items of clothing, from what people donate, that impact is really huge.
Yeah. It's massive. Yeah. And you're what's really interesting is you're playing a role. I guess this is the way you've taken trade as a business.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's a charity, but it's a business.
Absolutely.
Is that your impact now is right across the supply chain. So it's not at the end of the that sort of journey, if you like, once the consumer's, you know, bought something, repurposed it, maybe given it away, given it to you to resell. But you're impacting now how products are created and manufactured in the first place and really
circular.
Driving that sustainable proposition. Yeah, very circular. It's amazing. What happens to the clothing once they've been donated to trade? So if I bring something into one of your stores, what happens to it at that point?
So you can either bring it into our stores. We've got about 800 textile recycling banks all over London in the southeast.
Right.
So, and then I've got the home collections where a beautiful driver in a lovely livered van will come and thank you greatly for your donations. And all the clothing comes back to our warehouse based in Wembley, which again is a very unique way of dealing with charity shop donations. So other charity shops will deal with them over the counter, in the back of the shop and straight out. Ours goes up, your donations or the public's donations, into Wembley, and it goes up this belt, like a production line. The clothing is then pulled off, and so a shop manager will always be at the front of the sorting process because they're sorting for their own customers and their own demographic.
Right.
Again, this is something that makes trade very unique.
Yeah.
And so clothing's pulled off, all into different trolleys, out-season storage stored, and then each week off the clothes go to a shop as a delivery. Then they're hung, priced, steamed, tagged, put out for sale, gift-aided if they're gift-aided.
Yeah.
And then the money raised then goes back to the international development projects and sustaining our environmental work, which is keeping clothing out of landfill, and our education work, which is very crucial as well, of telling people how their clothes are made so that they can have their own choice.
Right. Or they can be better, they can make a better choice, a better educated choice of what they procure in the first place. That's a really interesting process in terms of the warehouse. Do all of the shop managers, do they all, are they, so are they all there on sort of one day of the week when the products are then being sort of segmented or distributed? I see. So they make their selection from that.
They do, yeah.
That's fantastic. That's amazing. And I mean, are there quite strong, I suppose there are quite strong differences then in terms of, you know, the selection that might be appropriate based on where the stores are? I mean, because obviously you're in a number of sort of diverse areas across London.
Yeah, so Westbourne Grove, most of the designer stuff goes there,
right.
Sadly,
yeah.
For the other shops. And, you know, we do try and test clothing and different product lines within each store and location.
Mm-hmm.
And there are shops where, you know, there isn't a desire for, you know, quality designer clothing. There's a preference to high street and high fashion.
Yeah.
And no matter what price, you know, you've put on this garment, it's not going to sell because the customer isn't there. So we really have played around, and, you know, we're very confident in where we place our product and what sells and what doesn't sell in each location.
Is that a multi-channel proposition? I mean, can consumers buy online as well?
We have got a small online outlet, and I think it's eBay, but we are really behind with online.
Right. Right.
So, you know, other charities started ages ago, and there has been an increase of like 35% of online sales of clothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But how we work, it's so labour intensive for the shops that is where our focus is, mm-hmm. really being on the high street and selling on the high street.
Sure.
And I think everybody gets very comfortable in their mode of doing things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's, yes.
And are there plans? I mean, given that you've already, obviously, you've got a successful business and you've got those 13 stores, are there plans to expand beyond London? Would you take the proposition and go to Glasgow, Edinburgh, Manchester, Birmingham, Newcastle, Durham, any other relevant town or city around?
I was looking in Manchester for a store. We have fans, so trade is quite unusual. Again, it has fans.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, we have people emailing from Australia, like, I was in Shepherd's Bush and I went to your store. Why haven't you got one in Australia?
Right.
And then my staff are totally multinational.
Uh-huh.
And so one day they want to go home. So, you know, there's thought processes at the moment of like, why can't we open in Italy?
Or
I want to go back and live in Spain. Can I start trade in Spain?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'd be open to that.
Right.
In relation to the UK, I'd love to go back to the West Country, Bristol, but there just seems to just never be enough. There just seems to be more and more to do in London.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, it's probably because it's this fashion capital, you know, the capital of consumption. You know, here in the UK, we buy more clothing than any other country in Europe.
Absolutely. And I guess from an efficiency perspective and a profitability perspective, if you're consolidating the business around one city, then, you know, in terms of your own supply chain and your own cost structure and everything, it's going to be much easier to manage than just then going and looking to expand and opening an isolated store, for example, in Bristol. But maybe that's where the web could play a part. Maybe you could, you know, online's an opportunity for you to extend your reach and start to tap into the fan base that you have, you know, throughout the country in the near future, possibly. We've touched on the circular economy, and I definitely believe we're heading very, very quickly towards that. It's quite interesting. I was reading quite a few articles just over the Christmas period and into January about, you know, performance and Boxing Day sales and Black Friday and everything else. And there was actually quite a lot of talk in the media about the fact that sales were affected by, you know, consumer reluctance to buy fashion. To buy fashion, whether it was online or in store, as a result of the impact on the environment. Why is it the Greta Thunberg effect, or, you know, what? Because it does seem to have picked up a head of steam incredibly quickly. What's been the driver for it, do you think?
Many years ago, as an antidote to Black Friday, trade did launch a very clever campaign, Secondhand First.
Right.
So we were trying to get people to wear secondhand over new.
Yeah.
Black Friday, I think everything sort of imploded last year, and people were given a lot more information on the climate.
Mm-hmm.
And, the Environmental Audit Committee, they released a very damning report on fast fashion
mm-hmm.
and the fashion industry. So that got press at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Then we had the Extinction Rebellion, who did the most amazing job of bringing to the fore, you know, the climate emergency. And I think that sort of wasn't believed. And then all of a sudden, towards the end of the year, this momentum built, which I think did get people thinking, but I'm very, very cynical about retail, and you know, was sales down just because, you know, they'd started their sales earlier? Was everyone waiting for something? You know, we're just inundated with these peaks and troughs of prices. Christmas wasn't really Christmas this year.
Well, I've certainly always been a believer that Black Friday generally shifts demand. It brings forward demand from the Christmas period, and but also if you're, I think it probably affects, you know, bigger ticket purchases like electricals and homewares maybe more than it does fashion. But you know, if you're sitting there in August, July or August, and you're thinking about buying a new TV or a new sofa, and you know you've got Black Friday coming up, you're probably not going to make that full price purchase in July or August when you know you wait a couple of months and you can get a fairly healthy discount. So I've always been a bit cynical as to whether it drives incremental, you know, growth in the first place. But it's certainly, going back to the environmental element to that, it's been quite remarkable, I think, how quickly consumer behaviour, or certainly consumer mindset, is changing, and arguably behaviour. And if it does prove to be borne that consumers are going to significantly spend less on fast fashion, that's going to have major implications for the retail sector, because arguably the fast fashion, you know, element of retail is one of the sectors that's been doing well in the last couple of years, despite the challenges facing the high street and despite the challenges facing retail in general. But it's obviously going to be an opportunity for you. So how do you capitalise on that change in behaviour?
I think there's totally mixed messages going on at the moment, purely because nobody knows, or everyone's trying to guess where the consumer is going with fast fashion. Yeah. So, you know, there's reports that state it's set to increase by 62% over X amount of years.
Yeah.
You know, reports stating, you know, secondhand has increased by 35% online sales last year, in 2017. And I think, you know, the commercials are dipping their toe in the water with trying to sell secondhand. You know, they're trying out the rental markets, all these things which were grassroots activities. And so I believe, but at the end of the day, you know, we still have sweatshops in Manchester, in Leicester, making fast fashion for the UK for a quicker turnaround. I haven't seen any change that sales are particularly falling. I haven't seen any change in the behaviour of the fast fashion retailers. Mm-hmm. So this really cannot be a trend that people are going to stop buying fast fashion. It has to be now, and it has to be a forever change of how we consume, because the earth cannot cope with the demand on its own resources, and we are overheating, and the climate was insane last year. You know, we had record days of heat. You know, there's people wearing T-shirts this year at Christmas.
Sure.
And it's global, and, you know, climate change impacts everybody, and it causes great poverty, and it will even impact, you know, people who make our clothing, whether it's the cotton farmers.
Well, but then again, taking a positive from the change, or the potential change that I think we're starting to see in consumer behaviour, it is going to be an opportunity for you, because it's going to drive demand for what you do as a charity, and therefore, that again, going back to your circular model, that's also an opportunity then for you to do even more to support, you know, the organic cotton and the, you know, that sort of very beginning of the supply chain. So your impact as a charity could, over the next decade, could be incredible, and could be X times, you know, a multiple of where you are today.
We have seen our sales increase quite, you know, dramatically over the last 3 or 4 years, and all charity retail is actually up. And what's even more interesting and beautiful about charity retail, you know, people complain, oh, there's, you know, a charity shop on every high street. Well, actually, that's a positive, because it is the antidote to fast fashion. You know, charities are offering a solution which could be taken up overnight if people chose to donate and shop within charity shops on their high streets.
Sure. I have a feeling that both fast fashion and charity shops are going to have to live together for the foreseeable future, because I guess without the fast fashion, you have no circular economy, unless we move completely towards a rental model. You know, people still have to be buying fashion for you to then have a supply chain of products. Is that not the case?
No, not at all. No. Charity shops existed long before fast fashion.
Right.
And so what we would get through is like cashmere and quality clothing. Yep. So the clothing lasted a long time. Obviously, there wasn't as many charity shops on the high street. And yeah, when clothes were made, you know, with, so everything I'm wearing is secondhand. I always wear secondhand clothes.
I wouldn't have known.
No, you wouldn't. No, people. And you know, this, you know, the, so these culottes, that, you know, they're from the 1980s and they were made really well. It's really thick cotton. It's, you know, a scarf from the 70s. And, you know, I assume this is, this cashmere jumper is probably from the 60s. And it's lasted. And so that's what charity shops survived on.
Sure.
Not fast fashion, which, you know, last year we had the sale of the £1 bikini. And so when I go to our warehouse and I look through the donations, you know, I help my staff. Some of the fast fashion, it's so tangled, you actually can't work out what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just this piece of shriveled material that's disintegrated itself.
Because of the poor quality of the product,
So no, we don't coexist.
No, well, you don't necessarily want to coexist, but by the end of the day, well, you will coexist.
Yeah.
I mean, what I'm saying is fast fashion is not going anywhere anytime soon, but I think that clearly the fact that you are having an impact, a very positive impact on that very start of the supply chain, right at the point of, you know, the sourcing of organic product or of organic materials before the products are even manufactured is fantastic. And I think the more you can do to help along with other charities, along with other organisations, to drive us towards a more sustainable future. There's no question that all those fast fashion retailers have a very big part to play in that. And there's no question that the current model, certainly in my opinion, you know, isn't sustainable.
No.
Sorry to use a pun, but it's not, right?
No.
For the reasons that we're talking about. I know a lot of them, I mean, have already made commitments towards, you know, moving towards, you know, being sustainable, being carbon neutral and everything else. The likes of Zara, I think, have talked about getting becoming sustainable by 2025. Some others have 2030, 2050, varying timelines. I think one of the things I feel when I read some of these dates, if you like, or the rhetoric behind this, has never really been quite sure why is it so far in the future and could they not get there quicker and what are they actually doing about getting there and is it buying time or are they actually doing something about it now?
I'm quite cynical, as you
may
have noted.
Yes, I gathered.
I
think you have a right to do so,
No, I mean, I am bombarded with information on a daily basis, you know, on the impacts on people, the planet. And so, yeah, I feel I have a right to be. So if we take, you know, for example, sweatshops. So, you know, in the 90s, sweatshops came into the fore.
Yeah.
And it's, we're going to eradicate sweatshops. The fact that it's increased, you know, so here we go, 20 years later, it was noted, it was stated they'd be eradicated from the supply chains, and they weren't. You know, here we are, X amount of years later, still talking about, you know, the human impact, the human cost, still more factory fires, building collapse, nothing's changed, in fact, it's got worse. So all the, you know, when the Environmental Audit Committee released its report, it asked for regulation and legislation from the government, and the government turned down all the points of the proposal and the proposed points from the report.
Right. Well, I think, I suppose the way, yeah, it's a difficult one, but I mean, I guess the driver for change is ultimately going to be led by consumers. It's not going to be led by the government, and it's not going to be led, arguably, by retail businesses. It's going to be led by consumer behaviour. And the more consumers get behind the implications of the impact on the environment of fast fashion and other related sectors and what that's doing and what that means to the future of our planet, for the future of our children or our children's children, surely that's the driver, because that forces the hand. Because if you as a consumer change your behavior and you stop buying at the frequency that you used to buy, or you stop buying new products, you know, that ultimately is going to be the biggest driver for change. I would have thought.
There's a lot of consumers, there's a lot of people that you can't reach when, you know, trying to spread a message. But the high street and fast fashion has a bigger means to spread its own message. And, you know, it's a bit of a chicken and egg, the consumer, the retailer argument. I mean, if you were a consumer and you went into a fast fashion outlet and you know, you're buying a top or a dress for £4. And so, you know, would you actually go in and say, oh, can I have a dress, you know, that's had slave labour, it's been detrimental to the environment. And actually, I'll have that dress over there for like £1 more, because actually, you know, a few farmers in India have actually committed suicide by being indebted. So, you know, if you have that vision, someone doesn't go into a shop with a mission to buy into barbarism. So it's not a consumer choice, as far as I'm concerned, you know, within the scale of the production.
No, it's not. But what I'm saying is that consumer behaviour is clearly changing. The awareness of the implications of retail as an industry, of the supply chain, of manufacturing, of products and whether they're sustainable or not, and the implications of that on the environment and everything else is definitely changing consumer mindsets. The question is, how quickly does that sort of translate into a fundamental change in behaviour, and for how many people? But, you know, again, looking at some of the stats that I picked up on over Christmas, it looks to be biting already, you know, so it's clearly having an implication. Moving on to something hopefully more positive, at least in the context of retailers needing to do more to encourage customers to recycle their clothing. What would your message be to a clothing retailer to encourage them to work with you?
So I think trade gives very easy access to the public. So whether it's stating where all our textile banks, so the whole purpose is to make people give their unwanted wearable clothing to trade, the whole process as easy as possible.
Yeah.
So we do go into organisations and we give talks to staff. We also go in and we work with them on how to get clothing that's been consumed and no longer worn donated to trade, whether it's through our home collection service, our textile banks, or dropping in store. Yep. To trade charity shops. We also go in and work with staff, and so we do clothing drives. We educate people on, you know, the benefits of donating their clothing to trade.
10,000 items. 10,000 items of clothing are sent to UK landfill every 5 minutes. Every 5 minutes. That is ridiculous. What do we need to do to encourage more consumers to participate with trade and other clothing recycling programs?
Yeah, I think the stat, the one I always use is each week in the UK we consume 38 million items of clothing and throw away into the rubbish 11 million items of clothing every week. So,
right, yep.
You know, both with your statistic as well, it's so shocking. 11 million items yep. of clothing into the rubbish every week. So trade has a education department.
Yep.
And we go out and the aim is to reach, we've just finished an educational toolkit, which is to go into schools. So it really is about telling people the impact on the environment that your clothing has if you throw it into the rubbish. And there is alternatives. You know, clothing production, it creates 1.2 billion tonnes of greenhouse gases every year.
Yeah.
But instead of throwing into the rubbish, if you put your clothing back into circulation, then what we're going to do is decrease the greenhouse gases.
Got you.
So, yes.
So it's about really raising that, the education of those
yes.
key performance indicators, those statistics.
Yes.
Maybe KPIs is the wrong term, but, you know, those stats to make people more aware of their own behaviour. Tell me something, Maria. What brands do you think currently demonstrate a strong, socially responsible purpose? Are there any that spring to mind?
Well, Patagonia.
Yep.
So I went to visit a factory in India, a very sustainable factory,
yep.
And how it makes its clothing and obviously our cotton is used as well. So they have a whole philosophy of, you know, not really encouraging people to buy more, but to repair what they already have. Their clothing is made with longevity.
Do you know what's interesting? Sorry to interrupt, but often when you go into the homepage of their website, rather than seeing pictures of product or merchandise, for example, you'll see a picture of an ocean and and they're talking about protecting fish. And I think, you know, I agree. I think they're, you know, arguably one of the most socially responsible brands that, that come to mind.
Yeah, I totally agree. And when I was looking on their website too, you know, the downing in their coats are made from, well, it's taken from old jackets. So it's not, you know, ripping off more feathers off of ducks.
Right. Which certain brands might fall into the category of.
And, you know, and the only other person I know who's truly sustainable with her clothing is Catherine Hamnett, you know, who was the whistleblower, you know, 30 years ago to how our clothing is made.
Well, when I was a trendy young 16-year-old Glaswegian, I used to buy very expensive Catherine Hamnett jeans from various stores in Glasgow. Great brand. I think, you know, what I find really interesting is that often when I talk to retailers about, you know, my whole kind of mantra is I'm trying to make a difference. I'm trying to make a positive impact on the world in some small shape or form. I'm trying to drive positive change for both consumers and brands. And when I talk about, you know, the implications of a lot of this stuff, I do often get the kind of response that, oh, you know, if it's not one thing, it's another, and we're being asked to do all these things, and it comes at a cost, but it also comes at a benefit. I mean, the brands that I know who I think of as being socially responsible, so Patagonia is the most obvious one that springs to mind, in the same space, an ex-client of mine in Australia and New Zealand called Kathmandu, who are also in the outdoor space. When you look at the performance of those businesses, they're performing really well. You know, commercially, they are doing extremely well. Now, I'm not suggesting that all of that is down to the fact that they have a strong purpose and social responsibility, but I do believe that that's not only a driver, but it's indicative of the broader mindset of the people running the business, the culture of the business, the fact they look after their people, they look after their staff, trying to do their bit to look after the environment and have a genuinely strong purpose and sense of purpose across everything they do. You know, there's a massive correlation, isn't there, between, you know, doing this stuff, doing it properly, and the commercial performance. So why wouldn't you do it? There's a commercial imperative to do it, never mind anything else.
Well, I guess it depends on how big you want your profits, how fast you want to grow them. And, you know, if you do look after your staff and, you know, we all think, you know, we have to run an organisation or a business under this set structure. Well, in fact, you don't. You can smash the structure apart and you can be kind and, you know, you will get back and be rewarded for doing good things and kind things. And that's from your staff, whether it's, you know, to your customers. You know, you don't have to treat everything so roughly.
No, I totally agree. Another brand that comes to mind is Timpson. You know, where you get your keys cut or your shoes rehealed. I mean, I think there's a number of things they do which is really interesting, but, you know, they also provide an environment for ex-prisoners, you know, to come and work and sort of re-establish themselves, if you like, in society, in a working environment. I remember I took a picture, I used this in my presentations, of an A-board outside one of their stores that said, "Are you unemployed? Have you got an interview? Come and bring your suit in and we'll clean it for you." I mean, they're not a dry cleaner, right? You know, that's just a really incredible, socially kind and socially responsible thing to do. Mm. You know, but I think it comes from a genuine intent. You know, I don't think you can make that stuff up.
No.
I think it becomes obvious if it's not authentic and it's not genuine.
Yeah, I totally agree,
you know?
Yeah. Because there is a lot of stuff, you know, that's used for CSR and just marketing purposes. And you can see when it's disingenuous.
Exactly.
Actors are playing the role of customers.
I'm not a fan of the term CSR. So when I talk about it, I actually score out the word corporate.
Yeah.
Because I think that what you do is you put the emphasis emphasis on it being something that you have to do as a business rather than the emphasis on social responsibility. And that's just my thing. And I think the quicker we move towards that as a term rather than CSR, we'll probably help as a driver. Maria, it's been absolutely fascinating, and I could talk to you all day long about this stuff because I'm very passionate about it. I clearly haven't had anything like the impact that you have had, and I just want to take my hat off to you and say, you know, fantastic job, really well done. I think both in your career and going into a charity as head of retail and becoming its CEO and clearly, you know, growing it exponentially, you know, over the period of 21 years that you've been there. It's not often you meet someone that's worked in the one place for 21 years. That's pretty good going. And just keep up the good work because, you know, the genuinely the impact that you're having both in, you know, the sourcing of ethical and socially responsible and environmentally friendly products and the impact on that element of the supply chain as well as the circular economy, you know, component where you provide a source for retailers to repurpose products that they haven't sold or for their customers to come in and repurpose, you know, their secondhand clothing and everything you're doing. I just think it's fantastic. And I do think that you're going to have a big part to play in the future.
That's very kind. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining. I'm delighted to have been joined by Maria Chenoweth, the CEO of Trade. Maria, what's the URL for the website?
www.trade.org.uk.
Right. So for those of you listening that haven't come across Trade in the past, can't be many of you, but those of you who haven't, make sure you pay them a visit and find out where the stores are. And I'm sure if you live in the London area, you can engage with them. Thank you for listening to Consumer Focus with me, Martin Newman, and my wonderful guest, Maria Chenoweth. I hope you'll join me next time to talk about the latest in consumer concerns.